Yeah, so welcome to lecture number 6, and we did not finish the proof from yesterday, so I have to do it today. Let me shortly recall what we actually wanted to prove. So we had this theorem about martingale criteria for complete markets, and what was exactly that the market is complete. So that meant that for any non-negative random variable, there exists a p-admissible trading strategy such that I can represent the Z as the value of the portfolio at terminal time. So that means I can perfectly hedge, people say. And what was again a p-admissible trading strategy? That was the first of all, that phi is self-financing. And the second condition was that I'm never bankrupt. So I'm trading such that I always have the value of the portfolio at all times is non-negative, almost surely. So since we have in our market assumption that the probability measure for each little omega is positive, the almost surely is not so important here. So that would be just the empty set anyway. Okay, so that was the market is complete. So I can always hedge any payoff function because any payoff function can be understood as a non-negative random variable. And we wanted to show that we can figure this out by the equivalent condition that there exists one martingale measure for the discounted share prices with the property that the probability q of this martingale measure, each little omega has also positive probability. And the last equivalent condition was that the whole L2, this was we don't have it here anymore, but that was all random variables with second moment. Second moment is satisfied here anyway, so we can say that all random variables in this situation we can represent in this way. So we have a constant, and then we have this expression where we have the trading strategy and the difference of the discounted share prices. And so it's actually not just the trading strategy, because this is the part of the trading strategy which is responsible for the share prices, because you can see here the phi k is assumed to go from omega to rd only. So what we do with the bank account here is not considered, but you can see why this doesn't matter, because if we discount, then these differences concerning the bank account would always be zero. So the first component of the trading strategy isn't important here, because it would be multiplied with zero anyway. Okay, so we have already shown that one implies two, and we started to consider the equivalence between one and three. And here we did stop. So we said that in our market definition, we assume that we have no arbitrage. So we can, by the fundamental theorem of asset pricing, conclude that there's at least one martingale measure. This comes from no arbitrage. And then we have a self-financing strategy we would get that the value of the portfolio, if it's non-negative, then at terminal time, then it is non-negative, has been non-negative always before. And this we can see from the assumption that we have a Martingale measure, because this relation is equivalent to that with the discounted situation. So we just divide or we multiply with this beta. And if you have the discounted situation, then we know that the Q is the Martingale measure. And then we just use that the conditional expectation of this discounted value is just the discounted value at time k. And from the monotonicity of the conditional expectation, it follows that if this thing inside here is non-negative, then we get something out with this non-negative as well. So this is how far we came. And we continue with the proof. So we can see that, because if we assume that phi is self-financing, we get also that for all k is non-negative, and these two conditions together make up a p-admissible trading strategy. So we get that any self-financing strategy is p-admissible. So not in general, but here it's true. Okay, so now we want to do want to show one direction, namely we assume that we have one, the market is complete. So that means that we can hedge any non-negative random variable. But we want to do this because in free, okay, sorry that I'm going up and down all the time. So here it is concerns non-negative random variables, and here the L2 that are all random variables, also random variables which are both positive and negative and zero, and or only negative. So, but we can make the following thing. So for any general random variable Z, which goes from omega into R, we just split it in the positive and the negative part. So Z is equal to Z plus minus Z minus. And this is like we do in the integration lecture or whatever. So what is Z plus for each omega? That is the maximum of Z of omega and zero. And Z minus is also non-negative. That is the maximum of minus Z of omega and zero. And if we take the difference, we get our original Z back, of course. So, but now we have two non-negative random variables, and for each of them, there exists a p-admissible trading strategy. So I call that for Z plus phi plus and the other phi minus. And then we get that Z is equal to z plus minus z minus that we know, and then we can have that is vt of phi plus minus vt of phi minus. And because this is linear, so vt is basically an expression like that, if you remember. So at least in the self-financing case, we can write it like that. So then we can write that we have this. And yeah, and now we want to represent. So this is just with the not discounted stuff. And now you can write beta t of z is equal to, so beta t was our discounting factor. So we had beta k defined as 1 over sk0, the bank account value. And yeah, and then we get vt tilde of phi by definition. And that is then this expression. We go from 1 to t, yes. Yeah, and this implies in fact free, because if you have any random variable, then you can think of it's given like that, because if you take the random variable, you simply divide by beta t, and then you do the business with z. So you can have this, and so we have free. And how can we get from free to one? So if free holds, free was that we can represent any random variable in that form. Then we just go kind of the way backwards, then especially for z greater or equal to zero, we have to be a little bit careful, because in this space they are only the discounted thingies, so we need to take z. Okay, so we want z is, yeah, the same line as here. So we have that there exists a phi with beta t z is equal to. That should not be alpha, this should be phi, sorry. It is alpha, but we put in phi. Okay, and the same expression. Uh-huh. What's going on here? Sorry. Ah, maybe this is, no, it doesn't let me write anymore. So every time we have a new problem today, I have to check. here. No. Oh, yeah. Here it works. So maybe because it's too high up. So there was, theoretically, there's a T. Okay, I'm writing it here again. Yeah, I think it's clear. Anyway, we have, if you have a phi like that, then it follows that Z is equal to Vt of phi. Okay, and then that gives us one. Yeah, what is left is maybe the more interesting part. So that was just a using this representation a lot and seeing that actually number one and three are looking very much the same. The question is, why does exactly one Martingale measure imply that the market is complete? So this is what we want to understand eventually. So we go from two to one. And we still need for free in some sense. So we define our set F, which is this big set of all these objects. Where alpha is in real, sorry, alpha is a real number and phi k, each phi k maps from omega into Rd is f k minus 1 measurable. Okay, and then we had a long time ago, we had a proposition which said that now, what do we do? Maybe I can show it. It's a while ago that we had this. It was very at the very beginning. Maybe I can find the lecture to show you. So I updated, there were a couple of misprints in the lecture, and I updated them, and the new version should be on the internet now. So if you work with the lecture, always try to, I hear it's coming, always try to check, or in regular time, try to take the new ones, new versions. So this is proposition 212. And if phi is self-financing, then the value of the portfolio, so now we use it for capital T, is always given like that. Okay. How can I get rid of this like this? So proposition 212 gives the set of all possible values at capital time t. So we can use k to capital time. And what we want to show now if the market is not complete, This implies that there exists more than one martingale measure. So that means the number of martingale measures with respect to the discounted share prices is greater than one. Okay, that's our aim. So the market is not complete. That means we can, there are some random variables which are in the L2. Or for us, just some random variables which are not in this F, because F is the set of all of all possible values VT tilde. So that would mean that F is a proper subset of L2. That means there is an element, a little f, in L2. Which is non-zero, and which is orthogonal to the space F. So what does it mean? So we had in the proof of fundamental, or the fundamental theorem of asset pricing, we had already worked with this scalar product stuff. So we do now here the same. So if this F is not in this linear space, then we can assume it is orthogonal, and it would follow that F multiplied with Z has expectation zero for all Z in our linear space F, which is not the whole space. Okay, what do we do now? We need the supremum, so we denote by F infinity the maximum of F of omega I. I think we assume that the I goes from 1 to n. This is over all omega, and then we put the try to put create another measure. So we assume that we have one probability measure, and now we try to find another one which is also a martingale measure but not equal to Q. So we define Q prime to be 1 plus F of omega divided by the maximum, so F infinity, and times Q of omega. So this we do for omega. And the question is this a good choice? So we can compare this Q prime of omega, that should be greater or equal to Q of omega minus, so we don't know if the F is positive or negative, right? So it could be negative, and then the Q is 1 times Q, and maybe minus the modulus of this one. So what is the worst case we can have? That would be the f divided by 2f. Times q of omega, and that is 1/2, of course. And yeah, and what we need to show, we need to show that the Martingale measure we create, the second one, has also positive values for all omega, and that's done in this line, as you can see. What else do we need to check? Is it a probability measure? Okay. We take q prime of all omega. Since we define it for each little omega, we don't need to check anything else to check if it's a probability measure. We only need to check if it's normed by one. So what do we get? We use again the setting here, that one. So that would mean if you multiply 1 with q of omega, so we get the sum of q of omega, omega in omega, and then plus this. So, yeah, I forgot the 2. I was wondering where the 2 comes from. The 2 was here from the very beginning, from the definition. So, okay, so we can take this in front and sum up f of omega times q of omega, omega in omega. And now if you remember, we have chosen the little f such that it is that's behaving like that. So that means that we get here, this is 1 plus 1 over and this is 0. So that's the expectation with respect to q of f, and that should be 0. Yeah, not the whole thing, just this one. So we get 1. So that's okay. Why do we get this? Because because this equation holds for all z and f, and the z, which is constant 1, is in f. Because why is it in f? Because all constants are in f. So I can put this to 0, and then I realize that all constants are in f. So that is the reason. Okay, so we have q prime is at least a probability measure. With our desired property that each little omega gets a positive value. So the question is q prime a Martingale measure? So what do we need to check? We need to use the q prime such that eventually it turns out that the S tilde processes are Martingales. So we start with the following calculation. So we take the conditional expectation of the expectation first of with respect to q prime of this expression And now we have to apply our definition. So the Q prime has still this representation here. So we are going to use that. And first of all, we can write this is EQ multiplied with this value here. So if we compute the expectation with to Q prime, we can simply always put this value and then compute the expectation with Q. So this comes from the definition. So we would have phi k sk tilde minus sk minus 1 tilde. And then we multiply with this expression 1 plus f divided by 2 f infinity. And we split this. So the first gives us, so I mean, we use the 1 first. We get the expectation of this stuff. Plus the expectation can already take out this factor. Then we have the expectation with respect to Q and the same expression now multiplied with little f. Okay, so I better start before the formulas are horribly big. So let's take this away. So we multiply with f, and then we take the expectation. Okay, what do we get? So the first expression we can discuss, it's going to be 0, because q is a Martingale measure, and if q is a Martingale measure, and if I k are predictable, then this is supposed to be 0. So, sorry. So this is 0, since Q is in M S tilde. And this is 0 because this is how we took this assumption, right? We have chosen the F such that it is always the expectation of F with any element of capital F is 0. Now, this one is definitely an element of capital F because if you look at capital F, this is written like that, so you can put alpha to 0 and use this as an element of capital F. Okay. So maybe we should put here, because this is the important point here, so we put here a star, and then we can argue that this is equal to 0 by the star assumption. Okay, so what do we get? We get that this left-hand side is equal to 0. And I'm not repeating this, but I try to remind you that we used this equation already once in order to show that we have a Martingale measure, namely in the proof of the fundamental theorem of asset pricing, where we said that we have a Martingale measure and we had the same situation. So how would we proceed and how did we proceed in that proof? So we said, okay, if this holds for all predictable, then we can choose the predictable phi k in such a way that we have only something non-zero in one coordinate. So then we can choose here the difference of a certain coordinator of the share price of one share price process. And then we even did more. We said that now we choose this phi k in one process in one coordinate. We choose zero everywhere up to one set, which is in such a way that it's predictable. And that gave us exactly the equivalent relation for conditional expectation. So we just do the same as in that proof because we have the same situation. So like in the proof of the fundamental theorem of asset pricing, so that was theorem 2-1. We can proceed to show that Q prime is a Martingale measure. And that was what we needed to do. So that's the end of the proof eventually. I'm trying to check the time. Okay, so we still have time and we can start with the next section. And that's more concrete because now we consider again. So we started with this coin tossing model and we continue with that. And it has a name in finance. So it's called the Cox-Ross-Rubinstein model. It's the same we had already, basically, but we now consider, or now we eventually see that why is it called exponential random walk? Because I said that we did consider that that you don't see anything exponential. Now we're going to see this. Cox, Ross, Rubinstein, three people who worked on that. And as I said, this is a very very simple model for share prices, but for many applications, it makes sense to assume this because it's numerically very easy to treat. It doesn't work today. No. One more trial. Okay. Maybe I should not do this anymore. Okay. What is the Cox-Ross-Rubinstein model? So we again use our omega, which is this dt, like in also in the exercises this week. And so we still use old notation, same meaning. I don't repeat this now. And we assume that F is F capital T. And we had this process which goes up by a factor U if we toss heads. And if we have tails, it goes down by a factor D. U like up and down like D. And we still have this situation. And we said that, okay, the price process SK of epsilon was this element in dt, is in fact depending only on the first k times tossing our coin. And that is given. Now we assume we also have a bank account process. So we assume we have interest rate and it's constant in each time period or each day or however you interpret that. And we only have one share price here for simplicity. And it depends then on epsilon 1 up to epsilon k. So this is deterministic. The r is the interest rate. Nothing is set here, but I'm going to say this. So is greater or equal to 0. And concerning the share price, so SK1, K from 0 to capital T is the exponential random walk. From section 1.4. We assume that if it goes down, then it goes by a factor down, which is greater than 0 and less than 1, and the u should be bigger than 1. So these were our assumptions. And we had the situation that sk plus 1 was either u times sk or d times sk, depending on what the coin was telling. Okay, and now we get our exponential random walk by setting the d to be e to the minus sigma minus b, and u should be e to the sigma minus b. So sigma is supposed to be positive and b can be real. And now you have to kind of adjust or find out the b and the sigma such that the relation is satisfied. And actually we don't need that it goes up and down. We just need, I'm going to remove that. We just need that one is bigger than the other. So it's not necessary to have it between one because we still have the interest rate. Because we are interested in the discounted share prices. So if we take SK tilde, what was the rule? We divide by SK zero. And SK zero is this one. So if you divide this by that, what do you get? One. So the first price or interest bank account process is going to be very boring, and the other looks like, well, the SK1 and then divided by that, and then artificial way to express this is writing e to the minus log 1 plus r times k. So we had that SK 0 was 1 plus r to the power of k. So if I divide by that, I can multiply with this, right? Yeah, and then we can write this even more different. And this is my last line for before we start the break. So this one is independence of the epsilon being plus or minus 1 is e to the, according to this rule here, okay. So maybe you don't see everything. So if I multiply with D, then I would multiply with this. If I multiply with U, I would multiply with that. So if I want to unify this again, so I would write sigma times epsilon I minus b, and then comes this term, minus logarithm of 1 plus r. And here I've multiplied with k, but now I'm just multiplying each d and u respectively. So the I goes from 1 to k. So then I have the k here again. Okay, so that is, now you can see why it's called exponential random walk. So you can take the product still here as a sum, and then you have an exponential term. Okay, that's where the name comes from. Okay, let's stop and continue after the break.